before we actually begin, let's take a moment and cultivate our motivation. So begin by asking yourself, what is my motivation? Why am I here on the telephone listening to these teachings? What was the thought, what was the intention, the reason that was in my mind that brought me here? Whatever our initial intention was, let's build upon it. And let's think that we're going to listen attentively and discuss and share the Dharma today so that we can identify and then free ourselves from disturbing emotions, so that we can identify and then enhance our good qualities. And let's do this whole process not merely for our own benefit, but recognizing that we're intricately interrelated with each and every other living being. Let's share the Dharma today so that we can be of great benefit and service to all living beings. So cultivate that as your actual motivation for being here now. Okay. So, I always start out with motivation because from a Buddhist perspective, the value of what we do all depends on what our motivation is. In America, we're used to evaluating our actions judged on how they appear to others, judged on whether others like or dislike, approve or disapprove of what we're doing. But actually, others' opinion is not what determines the value of our actions or of our thoughts. It's what our motivation is. You know, what are we aiming for? Because it's quite possible, and I think, I don't know about you, but I certainly have had it happen sometimes, where I've had quite a self-centered and even totally rotten motivation, but I've succeeded in pulling the wool over other people's eyes so that they praise me for what my action was. So, you know, that can happen, but it doesn't mean that the action that we did was beneficial, even though others approve and praise us. And similarly, we've probably all had the experience of doing something with a very good motivation, an attitude of kindness, but others have perhaps misinterpreted our actions or seen it through their own filter and disapproved or criticized what we've done. So that doesn't mean that what we did was bad or wrong, because if our motivation was something good, then the action itself becomes something beneficial in terms of the long-term karmic effect of it. So that's why we really take the time at the beginning of any Dharma activity, and actually it's good to do at the beginning of every day, to really cultivate a good motivation, because if we do that, then it makes everything that comes after that something beneficial, and it also helps us really remain centered and wise about what we're doing because we started out with a good motivation. Okay, now, in terms of the actual topic of anger, let me start with defining how I'm using the word, because you know, anger is a word that's very broadly used in English, and so it's good if we're all on the same page regarding what it means. So I'm using it as a very generic kind of word that talks about a number of different emotions. And what these emotions all have in common is that they are based on an exaggeration of the detriment of a person or object or idea or thing, and thus because we can't bear, you know, what we've created in our mind through this exaggeration or projection, then we get upset and we want to attack or flee from the object. So anger is usually in reference to one of three objects. So it could be somebody who harms us, it could be the suffering itself, or it could be the cause of the harm. Okay, so someone who harms us, that's pretty clear. You know, somebody criticizes us or trashes us behind our back. That's somebody who harms us. It could be the suffering itself. For example, when we're sick, okay, we're angry at the suffering experience of being sick. Or it could be the cause of the harm. So, for example, if we got sick because somebody else didn't wash the food or somebody else sneezed or something like that, then we could be mad at whatever the condition is that we think that caused the harm we're experiencing. Or we could be mad at the weather, for example. You know, the weather is bad and that makes us angry. Okay, so that could be the cause of the harm. So through, in reference to one of those three objects, then anger agitates the mind. It's unable to bear that suffering or, you know, that experience. And so therefore we intend to cause harm to whatever is causing that experience. Or we tend to get, we have the wish to get away from it ASAP. Okay, so that's the broad definition of anger that I'm using, and it includes the various emotions that on one hand may start with, let's say, being annoyed, being irritated, being frustrated. It can progress to hatred or being outraged or enraged, being rebellious or spiteful, wrathful, critical and judgmental. I think you're kind of getting the idea. But it refers, to, I'm using it in a way that encapsulates or encompasses all these various emotions, because they all have this same quality of being based on exaggeration and projection and therefore wanting to strike or flee. Okay. Now, the thing is, when we look at the very definition of anger, we can see it's an unrealistic attitude because it's based on exaggeration. Our mind has made up some story. Okay. But when we're actually having the experience of anger, do we ever think, oh, my mind is exaggerating, or this emotion is false? We never think that. You know, when we're angry, the one thought in our mind is, I'm right and you're wrong, and the way to solve it is you change. And that's it. You know, that's how we see it when we're angry. We never stop to think, oh, I'm creating this. You know? And we often see anger as something that somebody else made us, okay? So we say, you made me angry, okay? Or this made me really angry. And it's almost as if we see anger as a virus that came from the other person into us. You know, you made me angry. So your words had this contaminated evil virus in it, and it came out of your mouth, and then it hit my ear, and I got infected. Okay, so you made me angry. And so we view our anger as almost not even our own responsibility, because it's the other person's fault. I mean, they did this. They made us angry. Who, me? I'm just little old sweet benevolent good-natured. Wonderful me. How come you're saying this to me and treating me this way? Who in the world do you think you are? You know, this is the way we view it, isn't it? You know, this is our daily experience. And so, but actually, you know, when we stop and reflect on our experience, we can see that there's some exaggeration going on there. You know, there's some unrealistic view. Okay, so first of all, to start with, you know, when we're angry, okay, part of the unrealistic view is we are viewing this situation only in terms of how it is affecting me. Okay, or through how it appears to me. So it's as if we have this itty bitty, you know, little straw of a periscope going up and looking out on the world. And that periscope is called me, I, my, and mine. And we are seeing the whole world through that periscope. You know, everything we see is through the filter of me, I, my, or mine. And so then everything becomes, we interpret everything on a very personal basis. So that's part of the exaggeration. Okay, one good example of this is, let's say you're sitting in a room and, you know, your friend is sitting next to you. Now somebody walks in the room, they look at your friend and they say, okay, Joe, you know, I was really counting on you doing this for me, and you did such a crummy job, and it was terrible, and what kind of idiot do you think you are, you know, acting like that? And this other person goes on and on and on, criticizing your friend Joe. Okay? And you look at your friend Joe, and he feels hurt, and he's angry, and he's upset. And you look and say, look, Joe, calm down. It's nothing, you know? It's like this guy who came in was just venting. You don't need to take it personally. Just calm down. You know, you did what you could in the situation. And, you know, his anger is his problem. So that's how, you know, we are, that's how we act when it's our friend. We aren't upset at all, you know? And we just say that to Joe and calm him down. But if that same person walks in the room and instead of looking at Joe, looks at us and says the exact same thing, and, you know, whatever your name is, okay, in my case, children, you know, I asked you to do this. I was really counting on you. You did such a crummy job. How can you do this? You're such an idiot, blah, 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 blah. Then, because that person's looking at me, talking at me, you know, this is very important. You know, this is not something to be neglected. This is bordering on national catastrophe. How can somebody talk to me like this? How can they blame me like this? You know, who does this guy think he is? So do you see the difference in response? You know, when it's Joe, we say, the guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Calm down, he's venting. Same person says that stuff to us. Boy, are we furious. Okay, what's the difference? Okay, the only difference is who the person was looking at when they said those words. Okay, when they're talking to me, everything becomes incredibly important, you know. So then we get angry. Yeah, so you'd see right away there's exaggeration there. Yeah, we're not mad at the other person's words because we didn't get mad when they said that to our friend Joe. We got mad because we're filtering it through the lens of me, I, my, and mine. Okay, and we're taking it as directed to me, and therefore, you know, since this is, you know, really important stuff because I happen to be the center of the universe. And who's this person talking to the center of the universe that way? You know, that is not acceptable behavior. Yeah. So we all have our own little, what I call rules of the universe, how I think the world should be. And one of the first rules of the universe is people should treat me well. And people should like me, they should appreciate me, they should love me. Even if I make a mistake, it's always itty-bitty, they should forgive me. You know, we have all of these rules of the universe. So when people contradict them, you know, then we get really upset because we expect them to know the rules of the universe. And that is basically that we're the center of it. And it's their wrong conception that they think they're the center of the universe. You know, they have it all wrong. You know, we are. Okay. So do you see the basic exaggeration and projection that's going on there? You know, we're just making ourselves way more important than we are, interpreting everything through how we think it affects me, and then blaming the other person for our own anger, as if they caused us anger. Okay? When we have that attitude, that blaming attitude, we make ourselves into a victim. Okay? Other people do not make us into a victim. We make ourselves into a victim. Okay? Because we have the view of, you know, I'm just sweet, innocent me. I didn't do anything. It's this other person, and it's their fault. Therefore, I have absolutely no responsibility for my anger. You know? My anger is somebody else's fault. They have to change, and then I'll stop being angry. And until they change, I'm not going to stop being angry. And so we create a grudge. We hold on to a grudge, you know, and we will hold on to our anger, hold on to our hatred for a long time, years, decades, you know, till we die. We may take vows in front of the Buddha not to lie or steal or sleep around, but we renegotiate those vows when it's convenient for our ego. But when we determine we're not going to talk to somebody for the rest of our life, we never break that vow. You know, we hold that. You know, that person is evil. They made me mad. I'm not going to talk to them. I can't stand them. Okay? So, you know, this is all coming from us. Our anger is our responsibility. But until we own it as our responsibility, you know, whenever we blame it on others and make ourselves the victim, then we're the ones who put ourselves in prison, because then we can't do anything about our own anger. Because we're saying we can't stop the anger until they change. Okay? So it's pretty kind of shocking sometimes when we start to realize how our mind thinks and the prison we put ourselves into. But when we begin to see this, then we can also see that there's the possibility for change. Because if the anger is coming from the potential of anger that exists inside us and not from the other person, if the other person's only the cooperative condition, then, and the anger's coming from us, then there's the possibility to change. We can free ourselves from the seed of anger. Or even before we get to the point in our meditation to be able to free ourselves completely from anger, at least we can look at the stories that we make up that cause us to be angry. And we can push the pause button, or better yet, the stop button, on those stories that we create. Because whenever we're angry, there's a story behind it. You know, we may not even be aware of it, you know, but if we stop, and I think this is the benefit of doing a daily meditation practice, is we begin to look at how our mind works, we see that there's a story behind our anger. You know, there's a conception of who I am, how people can treat me, and then there's this whole story about who the other person is and what their action means. And we have no idea, really, whether we're interpreting that other person's feelings and words correctly. But we're actually projecting stuff onto it and getting really, really upset about it. So, you know, one example from my own life, I think that was it took me quite a while to see this, unfortunately. But when I was a teenager, I used to get really upset with my parents, you know, because I was supposed to be in at a certain time. And if I was 1 minute late, I knew my mother would be on the phone to the police saying, my daughter's been kidnapped, you know, da 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 da. And so I used to get really tight and upset, you know, because I had to call home if I was going to be 1 minute late. And I had to be on time. And I said, my parents are controlling me. They're running my life. They don't trust me. They're impinging on my independence and my autonomy. And I can take care of myself. I'm 16 years old, you know. And so I would get upset. And then meanwhile, of course, my parents are getting upset at me. And I thought their anger at me was like completely unfounded. You know, why are they getting angry at me? Well, you know, it took me about 10 years, and it wasn't until I actually met the Buddha's teachings that it dawned on me that my parents and I were fighting about two different things. Okay? For me, the issue was my independence and autonomy. For my parents, the issue was my safety. Well, you know, I didn't get that at 16, you know. I didn't get that they were concerned with my safety. I thought that they were deliberately trying to control me because they didn't trust me, you know. So in that case, I was totally imputing a motivation on my parents that they didn't have at all. I was completely telling myself a story about the situation, about what was going on, that was not at all the case of what was going on. And because I was interpreting this situation in this way, then I got upset and I got angry. But my whole interpretation was wrong. So lots of times when we get angry, you know, if we stop and look at the story, you know, what we're telling ourselves before, you know, the anger gets strong, we'll see how much of a projection it is, how much we're looking at somebody else's actions and words and thinking we know their mental state, when in actuality, we have no clue what their mental state is. You know, we are just projecting a motivation onto them. So one good way to handle it when we see we're doing that is to sometimes stop and ourselves think, you know, is my story true? What else could be going on in this person's mind? What else could their words or their actions indicate? You know, in other words, we begin to doubt our story. Sometimes we may even go to the other person and say, you're saying this and that, or you're doing this and that. What's motivating you? What's going on? How does this situation look to you that you're saying or doing this and that? And when we ask that person, then the key is to keep our own mouth closed and listen to what they say. Because our tendency is they start to explain how it appears to them. And then we interrupt and we say, no, it's not like that. You know, but hey, we just asked them to explain. So, you know, we should at least give them the courtesy of listening. And, you know, and try and really open our hearts and see how the situation looked to the other person. What was their interest? What was their concern? What was their need? And if we do this, then we often understand that our interpretation, our story, had nothing to do with the reality of the situation. And when we do that, then the anger completely evaporates. Okay? So that's one thing to do in that kind of situation. Let's come back and look at anger a little bit more, because I want to, you know, come back to the definition and refine it a little bit, because when I'm speaking about anger, I'm speaking about our own internal emotion. And this is a little bit different than how psychologists or scientists sometimes define emotions. Because in a conversation with a scientist one time, he was telling me that from his viewpoint, there were three aspects to an emotion. One was the what's going on in the body, you know, the heartbeat, the hormones, the galvanic skin response, the serotonin and dopamine, you know, whatever's going on in the body. Then the second thing that was the emotion was the actual feeling. And then the third part of the emotion was the behavior. So he was, you know, when he would speak of anger, anger also referred to, you know, what was going on in the brain chemistry and the brain synapses in the body. It was referring to the behavior and it was referring to the subjective feeling. Whereas from a Buddhist viewpoint, the emotions refer just to the subjective feeling. We're not talking about the behavior. We're not talking about the brain chemistry or the body chemistry when we're talking about emotions. And I think this is really important to realize in conjunction with anger, because many people think anger is when you yell and scream and throw things. And so they think, well, you know, I don't yell and scream and throw things, so I don't have a problem with anger. You know, I'm fighting with my husband. He's the one who yells and screams. He has a problem with anger. It's all his fault. But me? No, I don't have a problem with anger. But that's not, you know, true from a Buddhist viewpoint, because we're looking at the emotion. And if the emotion is such that we have an exaggerated story behind it and we can't bear the situation and we want to strike back at what we perceive to be the cause of our harm, or we want to run away from it, then in fact we do have a problem with anger. And, you know, if we look at it this way, some people explode and some people implode. They stuff their anger down. Okay? So sometimes, you know, we're so angry that we can't talk. You know, have you ever been so angry that you can't talk? Yeah? You're so angry that you go in your room, you close the door, you shut up. You know, when you come out, you don't even look at the person you're angry at. You don't make eye contact. You turn your head away from them. You know, well, there's, you know, you're not yelling and screaming and throwing things, but boy, we're angry. You know, so I think it's really important to recognize that anger is the emotion that we're feeling, and it can come out in very different kinds of behavior. Okay? So sometimes our anger might be very aggressive and we yell and scream and throw things or hit somebody. Sometimes our anger makes us extremely passive. You know, we become so passive. No eye contact, no words, you know, our body posture slumps over, we turn away, we're totally passive. Okay? Both of those are indications, you know, both of those behaviors can be indications of anger. Yeah. So we have to look at that. Mm-hmm. What I always find so interesting about our behavior when we're angry is that our behavior usually produces the opposite result of what we want. Because when we're angry, you know, what is it we really want? You know, I think we really want when we're angry is to somehow be close to the person, especially when you consider that a lot of our anger is towards the people that we care about the most. Okay, so we get angry at them, but what do we really want at that moment? We really want to be close to them. Yeah, but then our behavior, does our behavior make other people close to us? You know, we yell and scream. Does that make people love us? Forget it. Okay, or we do the other thing. We withdraw. We don't talk to them. We turn our back. Does that make them feel close to us? No. So, you know, we look at anger, and the behavior that comes out of anger actually brings about the exact opposite of what we really want at that moment. Because what we really want is somehow to be close and communicate. So it's so incredible how anger is distorted in that way and very disadvantageous. Okay. Now, the antidote to anger is called patience. And it's really important for us to understand what patience is, because, you know, sometimes the English word does not match the Dharma meaning because, you know, we're trying to find one English word to translate. So sometimes it's patience, sometimes it's tolerance or forbearance, but none of those words actually express the real meaning of the Buddhist word. So what we're actually meaning when we say the word patience is the mind that can remain calm and clear in the confront of harm. Okay? So being patient does not mean sitting there and waiting for somebody. Okay? It's not patience like that. And it doesn't mean stuffing our anger down, because if we stuff our anger inside, we haven't resolved it. We're still angry. Just comes out in another way. That's, you know, so patience isn't, you know, stuffing our anger down, putting this nicely, icky, gooey grin on our face, saying, oh dear, it's okay what you did, I'm not mad. but inside we are furious. You know, that's not what we mean by practicing patience. That's still anger, okay? So patience is really in mind where we've been able to clearly see how our anger is based on total distortion, you know, total hallucination. And when we see that, then we let go, you know, and then there's nothing to stuff down. There's nothing to spew out into the environment. Okay? So in Buddhism, when we're talking about, you know, remedying anger, we're really talking about this very deep level of seeing how the way we're perceiving and interpreting something is incorrect, and thus letting go of the emotion that we feel. Okay? So this involves a lot of deep work, because often when we're angry, you know, we just feel that, well, what I'm feeling is the only possible way anybody could feel in this situation. You know, my best friend just criticized me. Well, yeah, the only way anybody else could feel is hurt. The only thing anybody could feel is angry. You know, somebody just betrayed my trust. Well, the only way I can feel is angry. You know, and so we box ourselves in by seeing our emotions as something fixed. Yeah, that's kind of the virus effect. You know, I caught it from somebody else. I got it from them. They made me angry. But when we slow down and we see the story that we created, that's coming from our own mind that gives rise to the anger, then we see, yeah, that anger in a way is a choice. Okay, maybe it's not like such a clear choice to us because we're clearly stirred up. But, you know, there is a certain moment there where we actually intend, we choose, we bend over to the side of anger. Okay, because we're making up the story. But if we can catch the story in time and see how the story's distorted, then we can stop the anger from arising. Or even if the anger has started to arise, if we're able to catch it when it's still small, then, you know, we're able to see the situation more clearly and we're able to drop it. The difficulty comes when the anger's gotten big already, okay? When it's big, then we're very firmly entrenched. And it's much more difficult to handle. And so it's for that reason that we try and catch our anger when we're small, when it's small. And when we try, through having a daily meditation practice, of being much more aware of what's going on in our mind, and when we're starting to make up a story, catching it. Because we begin to see, you know, as we meditate, that we have many habitual stories. You know, when we were in English class, we all thought we couldn't do creative writing, you know. But if we look at it, our mind is excellent. We creative writer. We make up so many dramas. We make up science fiction horror stories. We make up comedies. We are always writing scripts. And just coincidentally, the key star of our dramas and horror films, coincidentally, happens to be me. Okay? So we are creative writing this drama, this horror film, and not even realizing it. And then making ourselves angry, basically. And not even seeing that we're doing it. So we don't see that there's a choice of becoming angry. We see it as the only possible emotion we can experience. So it takes a while through our practice to actually start looking at our stories and looking at the habitual stories we tell ourselves. You know, it's just amazing. And I don't know about you, but sometimes it takes me years to actually have the clarity of mind to understand the stories, my habitual stories that I've been telling myself. So, one of my main stories, and some of you may also like this kind of drama, it's called Poor Me. Okay? So I don't know, I can't see your hands, but you know, maybe some of you are right in the poor me dramas like I am, you know. So, you know, this is one of my habitual stories, you know, poor me. People don't understand me. They don't appreciate me enough. They don't love me enough. You know, I'm trying so hard and they don't give me credit for what I'm doing. I'm being so kind and they're not seeing my kindness. They're rejecting me when I care about them. Poor me, poor me, poor me. And you know, I mean, I can get into a real good poor me scene, you know, and spend quite a long time in it. One of the inmates I write to, he calls it throwing a pity party. Okay, we throw a pity party for ourselves and we sit there and feel sorry for ourselves and angry at the rest of the world for how awful they treat us. And we think this is reality. You know, I thought it was reality for years. You know, years, you know, just poor me, you know, and you know, it took me a while to wake up to the fact that, you know, I am writing this story. I am interpreting other people's words and actions in this way. You know, the meaning I'm giving it does not inhere in their words and actions. This is something that I'm projecting on top of it. And even if the person didn't like me, or even if they had a bad intention towards me, still, why get angry at it? You know? Why? Because what is the bottom line story of what's going on? You know, if somebody's saying or doing something to me that I find disagreeable, you know, it's because that person's unhappy. It's because they're confused. Yeah. I don't think so many people are really trying to harm us. I think most of the time, people are just acting out of their own confusion. And part of their confusion might be, you know, if I hurt this other person's feelings, I'll feel better. But I don't think they're really trying to hurt us. They're just trying to find some way to feel better. And they're confused about how to do it. And I think if we look in our own lives, we've all always, you know, often been in that situation of, you know, doing a lot of things out of confusion in an attempt to feel happy when we're not happy. So I think if we can look at the people who are, you know, doing things that we dislike or that we disagree with or that we find painful, and instead of, you know, writing the script of they are harming me, you know, look at it and say, here's somebody who's unhappy. Because that's actually what's going on, isn't it? You know, here's somebody who's unhappy. Oh, you know, I know what it's like to be unhappy. I know what it's like to be confused. Why do I need to hate this person? Because they're unhappy. Why do I need to hold a grudge against them if they're suffering? You know, when I'm miserable and I do things that disturb other people, I want them to understand my misery. I want them to forgive me. Well, then I should act the same way towards them. And, you know, to really understand that people do harmful things because they're unhappy. You know, because when people are happy, they don't intentionally harm anybody. You know, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, it's so beautiful out, I feel loved, I feel happy, I feel really good today, I think I'm going to go hurt somebody else's feelings. You know, nobody thinks like that. Yeah, when the intention comes to hurt somebody, it's coming out of our own suffering. So if we can see that the people who hurt us, you know, they're unhappy at that time, then, wow, you know, they're actually objects of compassion, not objects of hatred, not objects of anger, you know. So when we have some compassion for their suffering, then our mind becomes patient, our mind becomes strong and clear and calm, and we don't misinterpret what they're doing. Okay? And that's even if they should happen to have a bad intention towards us. And like I said, I think very often people don't have a bad intention, but we misunderstand what they're doing. Or we just think, you know, they're not treating me the way I should be treated. No? They're treating us the way they think we should be treated, but, you know, we expect them to know how we think we should be treated and treat us that way. You know, they're supposed to read our mind and know what we want, know what we need, know who we are, you know. I mean, we really expect sometimes other people to be, you know, the world should know how wonderful we are and how fortunate it is to have us in it, you know. So why are people treating me like dirt when, you know, I'm so wonderful? So, I mean, this is all our ego problem, isn't it? You know, it's coming from, you know, what we call in Buddhist terms self-grasping, the wrong conception of the self, and then also self-centered mind, the mind that, you know, inflates our own importance, inflates the heaviness of our own suffering, inflates the value of our own happiness. Okay? So when we see this, then we can let go of the anger, and then that is actually a mind that's patient. When our mind is patient, then there's a clarity to it, and we can really deal with the situation in a much more appropriate way than when we're all stirred up and under the sway of anger. And I really say this, you know, because there's a certain attitude that we have, especially in American culture, that says anger is good. And if you're not angry, people are going to step all over you. And if you're angry, you have power. And anger is really good, you know. And I used to think that way myself. But, you know, I saw my anger is good. You know, my anger is good because I have to defend myself. And my anger is good because otherwise people will take advantage of me. But other people's anger, that was not good. That was distorted. You know, that was based on their hallucinations, their exaggerations, their being emotional. But my anger was right and just, and their anger was wrong. Okay, you know, very logical, right? But, you know, this is the kind of often ridiculous way our mind thinks. So, you know, we have to really come back and ask ourselves, is anger beneficial? You know, not only other people's anger, but our own anger. And I remember one time I was in Michigan and I was giving a talk to some people from the university who were from the mediation and conflict resolution department. And I was talking about the disadvantages of anger to them. And they got so mad at me. They were so mad. They said, but anger is good. Anger lets you know something is wrong. Anger lets you keep, you know, protect yourself. And it was just so interesting for me that even these people who are, you know, trying to mediate conflicts think anger is good, you know. But, you know, let's look at our own experience. You know, is anger really good? Okay, so first of all, okay, ask yourself, am I happy when I'm angry? Okay? Because if anger is good, we should be happy when we feel it. Okay? Anybody feel happy when they're angry? Okay? We feel miserable when we're angry. We feel totally miserable. So right away we see that anger is not conducive for human happiness. Because if it were, the angrier we were, the happier we would be. But that's not our experience, is it? The angrier we are, the more miserable we are. So right away, that's a disadvantage of anger. Okay? Now, look, at how do we act towards others when we're angry? Okay? Well, you know, these two behaviors I talked about, you know, the explode mode or the withdraw mode. Okay? Either one of them, do they bring about what we want? No. Okay? How do we speak to other people when we're angry? Okay? Now, let's back track, just one minute. Who do we get angrier at, strangers or the people we love? You know, in your own experience, who do you get the most furious at? The people you love or people you don't know? Yeah? Usually, it's the people we care about. You know, family members, very, very good friends. We get really furious with them. What do we say to them when, you know, when we're angry? What do we communicate? We might say the most outrageous, horrible, cruel things when we're angry. You know, things that destroy trust. And it's taken us a long time to build up the trust. And then we destroy it when we're angry. Okay? So right away, there's another disadvantage of anger, is it destroys the relationships with the people that we care about the most. Pardon me? Okay, so anger really destroys the relationships that we care the most about. You know, so when we look in our own experience, you know, the anger really isn't advantageous. Yeah, so we need to find a way to see through it, to see through the story behind anger, and let it go. Now, one important point that I want to make before I pause for questions here is that we are not bad people because we're angry. Yeah, very often in our culture, when we start thinking about the disadvantages of anger, we then draw the conclusion, well, then I must be a bad person because I'm angry. No. Okay, and I'm taping this so you can listen to it later. Yeah, anger does not mean we're bad people. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be angry. Okay, repeat. I am not saying we shouldn't be angry. When we're angry, our anger is there. Okay, I'm not saying we're bad. I'm not saying we did the wrong thing. But at that time when we're angry, we have a choice. Okay, do we want to nourish the anger or do we want to apply the antidote to the anger? Okay, it's at that point, you know, that we have to look. And am I going to hold on so much to my own view that I'm going to continue being angry? Or am I going to really try and loosen the grasping at my own view and try and see the situation from another point? So a point of view so that I can release my anger and help myself be calm. Okay, that's the question we have to pose to ourselves. Okay, so don't, you know, mess it up with judging yourself for being angry. That's not the point. That's not the issue. Okay, the issue is, what are we going to do to prevent the anger because we've thought about it and we would like to be able to prevent it? And if we aren't successful in preventing it, how will we counteract it? Okay? Because we care about ourselves. So we're trying to counteract or prevent our anger because we care about ourselves and we want ourselves to be happy. And because we care about others and we don't want the detrimental effects of our anger to be strewn out on the environment around us.